I'm going to present Flex. It's a new way of requesting operating system services, a mechanism that doesn't require processor exceptions. So for the past 30 years or so, operating systems have implemented usually synchronous exception-based system calls. And by that I mean user space is running, issues a special instruction, and jumps immediately into the kernel due to a processor exception, executes the system call, and then jumps immediately back to user space, executing another processor exception. And there are a couple of problems with synchronous system calls. One is that they're inflexible in the way we can schedule execution of the system call. And another problem is that they're expensive. And as I'll show in this talk, there are a couple of costs associated with synchronous system calls. So a direct cost, which is mode switching back and forth between user and kernel, and an indirect cost, which comes from the processor structure pollution when you multiplex user and kernel execution at a high frequency. So Flex is our attempt to update the system call interface for multicores, getting rid of exceptions. So this is a high-level overview of our work. There are two main components. So Flex is the layer that sits between applications and the operating system. And it can sit side by side with traditional synchronous system calls. And the second component is FlexThreads library, which tries to utilize exceptionless system calls transparently for multi-threaded applications. So with FlexThreads library and exceptionless system call, we are able to achieve significant performance improvement on server workloads such as Apache and MySQL. So we can achieve throughput improvements of up to 40% while still reducing individual latency requests by 30%. And for Apache, we can double the throughput while halving individual latency, and this is with no changes to either MySQL or Apache. So to motivate the work a little bit and the costs associated with synchronous system call, let me share an experiment we performed. So we took an application that does virtually no system calls, this case Xylem from SpecCPU 2006. We ran this on an Intel Core i7, and we artificially introduced varying frequencies of exceptions just to understand what the impact on user mode performance would be. So we have two exception handlers. One is a null exception handler, which is only trying to measure the cost of getting in and out of the operating system. And the second exception handler is we do a write system call. And then this is trying to measure what happens to user mode when kernels actually executes code. And keep in mind that all the data that I will show is measuring user mode only. We're ignoring all kernel time. So because we're ignoring kernel time, ideally, the performance of user mode should be unaltered. However, that's not what we see at all. We see that there's up to half of your performance is lost due to these different costs. So on the x-axis, we vary the frequency of exceptions, with the leftmost being the most frequent. And on the y-axis, we show the degradation of performance of user mode if compared to an unaltered execution. And just for a reference, I showed the frequency of system calls of two of our workloads. And as you can see, for the portions that we care about above 2,000 instructions per exception, the indirect cost actually dominates the performance degradation. And so we try to analyze a little bit what's behind this indirect cost. And using hardware performance counters, we understood that user mode and kernel mode were competing for high-performant structures, such as L1 caches, TOB, branch predictors, and they were interfering with each other. So just an example, a Linux write system call can evict up to 2/3 of DL1 data cache and 2/3 of the data TOB. So that's going to cause a lot of performance penalty. And of course, I only showed you the impact on user mode, but you can imagine that kernel mode execution is also going to be heavily impacted. So asynchronous system calls are expensive. So our proposal is to change this model into sidestepping this boundary between user and kernel by using shared memory to communicate between user space and kernel mode. So we call these exceptionless system calls. In essence, we're trying to decouple invocation of system calls from execution. And there's two main components to introduce exceptionless system call into an operating system. So number one is the interface. So these are the syscall pages. That's how we communicate between application and the kernel. And number two, we need context now in the kernel to actually do the work that's posted on the pages. And these are the syscall threads. So there are three key benefits that we see from exceptionless system calls. First, if used correctly, it can reduce the direct costs because there's less mode switching going on. We can also do two optimizations using exceptionless system call. One is system call batching, and where we can execute long periods of user time and long periods of kernel time and hopefully reuse a lot of the processor structures. And the other thing we can do is dynamic multi-core specialization, where we can possibly dedicate entire cores to execute kernel mode and entire cores to execute user mode. And in an ideal case, you actually don't ever have to context switch between user and kernel anymore, and I'll show that in a couple of slides. But first, let me give an example of a write system call just to see how the interface looks like. So on the right, we have a syscall page, and it's just a series of entries. Each entry corresponds to a system call request. And we divide up each entry into multiple records, and most of this information is what would have been passed through registers in a synchronous system call case. So we have system call number, the argument list, return code. We also added a status field, which is a bookkeeping for our system. So if you do a write call, if the application wants to do a write call, first it finds a free entry in the system call page, writes the arguments to the page, and last thing it does, it writes a submit to the status field. And then until the operating system doesn't execute this system call request, the application has to find something else to do. So in the background, the operating system sees that this was submitted, executes the work, and updates the return code and the status to done. And then the application finally can consume its results and keep executing. Now, I mentioned that something happens in the background. We actually need some sort of context to execute that activity. So this is where syscall threads comes in. So these are kernel-only threads that are part of the application, part of the process. So they share the same address space. They share the file descriptor table and all the other process properties, except they never execute in user space, only execute in kernel mode. And their main job is to fetch system call requests from the syscall pages. And one interesting property of syscall threads is that there's fully schedulable entity. So, for example, if you're executing a system call that blocks, we can put that thread to sleep and just fetch another syscall thread to continue work issuing further system calls. The other thing is, the operating system can now control when and where system call execution occurs by simply scheduling the system call threads. So as I mentioned, one optimization we can implement is system call batching. So in this case, we simply have the user space request as many system calls as it can. So it batches them up, then jumps once into the operating system. The kernel will then use the system call threads to pull all of the system call requests and execute them without switching back to user mode. So we expect that we can avoid the direct cost, a lot of the direct cost, because we do a lot less switching. And we also expect to be able to reuse a lot of processor structure because we're executing for longer periods in user and kernel mode. Another more interesting optimization is dynamic multi-core specialization. So here in this diagram, we have four cores. The top two cores, the operating system decided to schedule only user mode threads. So it's only executing user mode code. The bottom left core, we have only syscall threads. So only kernel code is executing there. And then the bottom right core, you can have a mixture of both user and kernel. And depending on your workload, it may be useful to have some cores still executing both user and kernel. And so exceptionless system calls will make specializing these cores simple by simply scheduling either user or kernel cores, and it dynamically adapts to workload needs. Something I forgot to mention is this is on a chip, so we're sharing some caches that are quite fast to communicate with. So we expect that entries to be communicated within a few tens of cycles between one core and the other should not impact the performance of either kernel or user mode execution. So there's a significant difference between synchronous system calls and Flex with respect to the user mode interface. So what types of program do we envision using this sort of interface? So we have event-driven servers, which are already structured to handle asynchronous events that are very similar to exceptionless system calls. So those programs could program directly to the exceptionless system call interface. The problem with that is that we would have to change applications to support this new interface. Instead, for this work, we focused on a completely transparent mechanism using multi-threaded servers. So we have a new threading library called FlexThreads, which is completely compatible with Linux pthreads, and it requires no changes to the application or recompilation. And the whole goal of FlexThread is to try to convert legacy system calls into exceptionless ones. So the way FlexThread is implemented is a hybrid M-on-N threading model. So you have many user-level threads being scheduled on top of a kernel-visible thread. And FlexThread will redirect system call requests, and instead of issuing the instruction that causes an exception, will simply post an exceptionless system call to the system call page. Then it will switch to another user-level thread that can continue executing and only resume the original thread when the system call is complete. So we're trying to achieve the benefits of exceptionless system call while maintaining the sequential system call interface to the user-level threads. So let me illustrate this a little bit. So we have three types of threads in this diagram. On the top, we have user-level threads. So these are the pthreads the programmer will be aware about. Below that, in the FlexThread library, we have one kernel-visible thread. And the way we built the system is we only had one kernel-visible thread per core. And this is for optimization concerns. And in the bottom, I talked already about the system call threads, which live in the kernel. So we can begin executing a user-level thread. It wants to do a system call. So the FlexThread library will intercept that, post the request to the system call page, and block the thread. So now we still want to continue executing in user space. So we'll do a user mode context switch to the next available ready thread and continue executing. And hopefully, operating system can then start executing the system calls in the background. In the case that all the threads are blocked, we do have a mechanism to synchronous jump into the kernel. We call that flex wait. And we wait, the operating system will finish at least one system call request before waking up the kernel visible thread again. So we implemented flex and Flex Threads on top of a recent Linux kernel. We did some experiments on an Halem server, four cores on a chip, and clients driving the workloads were connected with through a 1 gigabit Ethernet. And we have two types of workloads in this evaluation. One which is heavily user mode biased. So that's running OLTP type workload on MySQL. And the other is Apache Bench on Apache, which is sort of an ideal case for exceptional system call where you have a good split between user and kernel mode execution. So on the graphs that I will show, I compare default Linux pthreads library, which is NTPL, and I call that just sync in the graphs, and compared to our FlexThreads library, which is using exceptional system call underneath, and I just call that flex. So let's begin with the MySQL executing on one core. So we're only doing system call batching. So because MySQL is heavily user mode biased, so executing between 75 and 80% of its time in user mode, we get a limited amount of performance improvement, 15%, when we have 256 concurrent requests. And sorry, I forgot to mention the x-axis. We increase the concurrency of requests, the number of clients connecting, and on the y-axis, the throughput. So when we go to four cores, so not only are we doing system call batching, but we're trying to dynamically specialize cores, we see an improvement of up to 40% in the throughput. Another important metric for server workloads is not only throughput, but latency. So here we have latency in milliseconds. I guess it's cut a little bit there, but hopefully you can see it on the y-axis, and execution on 1, 2, and 4 cores when we have 256 concurrent connections. And the bottom part, which is the blue part, we have the latency for an average request. And on the orange portion, we add the 95th percentile, the latency for the 95th percentile. And for the average, we see a reduction of 30% in the latency, and even more if you would consider the 95th percentile. Now, this is, I think, the most interesting graph in the results section. So we try to understand why are we getting these performance benefits. How exactly does this occur? So we looked at processor metrics using hardware performance counters, and we have two types of metrics. The orange bars are instructions per cycle. So instructions per cycle, IPC, is a very good summary of your efficiency of execution. And the higher the IPC, the more efficient you're executing. On the blue bars, we have misses on different processor structures. So we have some caches, TLB, branch predictor, and the lower the misses, the more efficient you will be executing. And for MySQL, since we were heavily biased in user mode execution, we see that most of the benefit comes from actually being able to compute in the kernel continuously for longer periods of time. So we have lower misses of several structures but an improved IPC. And so it's very reassuring to see that the mechanism is actually causing improvements in efficiency of execution at the processor level. Now, for Apache, which was more the ideal case for exceptional system call, we see that system call batching alone can improve throughput between 80 and 90% when we vary the request concurrency. And if we go up to four cores, so we're also employing dynamic multi-core specialization, we have a doubling of throughput. And you can see that even when request concurrency grows beyond 512 requests, we are still getting added benefit from employing dynamic multi-core specialization. So again, these are the latency numbers, and we have average numbers in the blue bars. Now the orange are not 95th percentile, they're 99th percentile, and this is embarrassing, but this is how the client reports the results. So, but overall, you see that there's the latency is halved for the average latencies. And for the 99th percentile, we get an even greater reduction. And so here we have the processor metrics. And we really see that IPC is following very closely that those performance gains. We have a doubling of kernel mode efficiency. We have almost a doubling of user mode efficiency. And we see that almost all of the structures, you have significantly less misses. So I have a discussion slide, but I just want to summarize it saying that we believe that this is a foundation. This exceptionless system call can be a foundation for lots of other uses. People have been talking to us about using it for other things. And we also believe that you don't need to drastically change your operating system architecture to support this. We did this on Linux on a monolithic kernel, but it could apply to microkernels and other types of operating systems as well. So to conclude, system calls degrade server performance. And we looked at how different costs of the system call degrade server performance. And I'd like to point out that even if hardware makers can make user mode to kernel mode switches very, very fast, they're not going to be able to get rid of the processor state pollution, because that's inherent on how processor designs are made nowadays and will be for the next, at least for the next decade or so. And so to overcome this issue, we propose exceptionless system call, which allows flexible and efficient system call execution by decoupling invocation from its execution. We also present a FlexThreads library, which can transparently, for multi-threaded applications, use this exceptionless system call interface. And it requires no modifications to the app. And we saw significant throughput and latency gains for server workloads such as Apache, the BindDNS server, and MySQL. And so that concludes my talk.
I'll quickly harass you with the same question I harassed the first speaker with.
Sure.
You did your work in Linux. Did you try to upstream the patches for the kernel portion?
No.
Do you plan to?
No.
Why?
Because I think it's a lot of time and effort that I prefer to use in other ways.
Okay.
Hi, this is Tom Ping from UMass. I have a question. I mean, since I mean, I think you use, like, I mean, the memory, I mean, you make, I mean, the user space and kernel space to share the memory instead of, I mean, reduce those, I mean, some, like, mode change. So whether it will, I mean, reduce the security, I mean, have you considered about that?
Are you asking about security?
Yes.
So the pages are, so one important thing that I may have forgotten to mention is these pages are per process, so they're within the application's address space. So there is no, there should be no ad security concerns. Anything you could do in a process before, you can do it now. I'm not adding any new vectors of attack. And if once you've attacked the kernel, then you know, all processes are up for grabs anyways.
Okay, thank you.
Josh Triplett, Portland State University. We have a system very similar to this that we should probably talk about offline with you, but one question is, it seems like you have two different models. You can either use your system directly for event-based systems or the emulation layer for thread-based systems, but you mentioned in the paper that all of your system calls are kind of inherently asynchronous. If they find that they can't complete, that they need to block in the kernel, they immediately jump to the next system call and start executing it, which seems to suggest that you can't have multiple system calls outstanding that have dependencies on each other. So you couldn't call read and then call write and leave them both in the same queue. You've got to block and wait for this result before you can call the next asynchronous system call.
That's
is
right.
That true, or do you have an architecture to handle that?
No, that's perfectly right. So we are relying on the fact that web servers and database servers, they have a lot of concurrency, a lot of parallelism, and mostly independent parallelism. So we are able to harvest enough work that's independent that we don't need to worry about tracking dependencies. Now, there are systems, composite system calls, I think, from a group at Stony Brook, I think. They were trying to do similar things where you can have, accept socket, set socket option, and read the first byte all in one call, and then you have the file, one of the members of the result of the system calls chaining into the other ones. So, but we don't have support for that, no.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Brian Ford, Yale University. This is really interesting work. I'm wondering, though, just how specific are your observations to the fact that there's a protection boundary there, mm-hmm. and how much of it is, generically due to the fact that there's a modularity boundary, and it can be productive to, do as much work of a similar type for as long as you can before you kind of erase the cache and switch over to another type of work.
Right.
You might observe the same kind of thing just in purely in user space if you have a decompression, decryption pipeline or something and you split those across cores. Do you have any feel for what is fundamental about having the protection boundary, or what changes about having the protection boundary or not having the protection boundary as opposed to modularity in general?
Right. So let me begin answering that by that. There was a project called Cohort Scheduling, I think Jim Lauris at Microsoft, where he made very similar observations. If you're jumping, doing unrelated things, you're going to cause problems. So they did a user-level scheduler that was just trying to match similar computation to be executed together. And this has nothing to do with the boundary. So some part of the observations are not about the boundary. They're simply about trying to execute similar computation together. So the boundary only adds to the problem because you have that direct cost, which I showed you in the beginning. If you don't have the boundary, say you do an in-kernel web server that was popular, or you move the boundary down so you have an exokernel, so you could potentially erase part of that that cost. So I don't know if that answered the question.
Thanks.
Michael Vrabel, UC San Diego. This is actually related to the question you just had. A lot of the performance degradation was because of pollution of processor state. In your system, if you are going along and you make an asynchronous call to the kernel, you then have to do something else while you wait for the kernel to respond, which maybe you're running other code in the application, which is evicting things from the data cache. Did you measure to what extent you were getting this pollution, even if you were not doing a context switch into the kernel versus the indirect overhead of doing the context switch and then immediately back to?
So you're worried about processor state pollution in between user level threads itself, right?
Yes, and did you measure that at all?
No, I did not measure. We do have some indirect, too bad. It's not working. So our TOB has actually increased for a couple of cases. And that is because you're actually spanning more data because you're going through multiple user level threads. So we didn't measure directly, but there's some indication that one could do even better if tried to restructure the application. I'm sorry, I don't have specific numbers.
Thanks.
Hi, Olivia. Andrew Bauman, ETH3. I think this is really neat. I'm interested about the situation where you execute asynchronous system calls on another core and you dedicate a core to running the system calls. Have you thought much about the sort of scheduling problem that arises here and how you decide how many cores to dedicate to running kernel mode, and how many cores you dedicate to running user mode, and how you do that optimization based on workload properties or something like this?
Yeah, so I tried many things during the course of this, and actually the simplest algorithm ended up performing the best for me. And we describe a little bit of it in the paper. So essentially we, you know, get a static list of cores from, you know, number x to x minus 1, x minus 2, and we say, let's wake up a syscall thread in processor x, okay? And it does some work. And then we get another, you know, system call request. Let's go to x again. Oh, it's busy. Oh, let's go to x minus 1. So we just always go to the first core and see if it's busy. If it's busy, we consume another core. If not, we just keep to that core. And it ended up, it's very elastic naturally, just by the amount of work you need to do.
So were you running multiple applications?
No, so I was running a single application all the time. So if you were to run multiple applications, you would have to maybe fine-tune this algorithm.
You need to think about affinity, I guess.
Yeah.
Sasha Fedorova, Simon Fraser University. Very nice talk, Livia. Thank you. So it seems to me that in order to take advantage of Flex SC, you have to have more threads than cores. And if that is the case, then have you noticed or can you imagine a scenario where having more threads than cores can actually cause you performance degradation? So for example, if somebody is running a totally CPU-bound application, they usually wouldn't spawn more threads than cores because then you have this context switching overhead, thread switching overhead without the added benefit because you can utilize CPUs 100% even with if you have as many threads as there are cores. So the question is, do you have to have more threads than cores? And if that's the case, can you imagine scenarios where this can cause overhead, meaning that some applications are just not suitable for this?
Yeah, so that's a good question. Fundamentally, we targeted server workloads. So I think it would be a very bad idea to run scientific workloads on top of this. And that's one thing that why we made sure we can still run traditional applications. So for scientific workloads where you're 100% CPU bound, user mode, or mostly user mode, you just want that one single thread. You don't want cache pollution. You don't want any of these interferences. So don't use this, is my recommendation. And then for server workloads, you have a lot of context switching between threads naturally, even on Linux. It's rare when you have a request handled by one thread that manages to finish without having to context switch multiple times in its lifetime. And it's for those cases where we think this could be a win.
Thank you.
Günther, Cornell University. So it strikes me that what you've done here is somehow managed to use the cache coherence protocol of the underlying hardware as a quick message passing mechanism. And so that's fine. The issue, though, is that you have a polling-based message pickup scheme here, and the latency of an operation is thus a function of context you have available to do that polling. So it strikes me that a crucial question here is what happens to this thing when you have lots and lots and lots of unrelated threads actually demanding service? So this is the how does it scale up question.
So I guess it would... We have multiple system call pages that we can distribute between multiple CPUs. So I'm not sure I understand what the issue with scalability is.
The polling frequency is going to be a function of how much other work the system call threads are doing. And
right.
Unless they can come and check that bit to see if there's a new posted system call, that system call will take a long while to actually... perform.
There's a shared data structure.
It's okay. I can take it offline if you want.
Let's take one last question.
Hi, Buck Krasik from University of British Columbia. So I'm curious. I really like this work, and I kind of wish it would go into the kernel. So if you can at least let someone else try, that would be cool. The Linux guys did something kind of similar with the Syslet work, which I think you mentioned in the paper. And one of the things they ran into was around kind of backward compatibility and robustness. Weird things like if you have the system call actually executing in a different PID, it can kind of bite you later. Did you run into any issues like that? Do you feel like you're going to be fully backward compatible to?
Yeah, so we ran 4 or 5 different applications. The only problem we had was get TID, which is get the thread ID, where syscall thread was executing get TID. And actually, we wanted the TID of the user space thread. So for that, we had to have a small patch up. But unfortunately, other than that, we didn't run into any backward compatibility issue. I think there is some differences between what the Linux kernel hackers were trying to propose and what I'm proposing, which made their problem a little bit harder to tackle. So, but we can talk more about this for sure.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.